On Saratoga Street in downtown Baltimore, amid dozens of wig shops and nail salons, and right around the corner from the huge Lexington Food Market, stands an old brick building. A tiny sign above the door reads, G. Krug & Son. If you walked by, you probably wouldn't even notice it. On this day, though, a few guys with bottles and brown paper bags have noticed it.
So you read that sign again. We've been here a long, long time. Watch it, baby.
Our recording engineer is advised to guard his equipment in this neighborhood. This brick building has been occupied by an iron forge and foundry for almost 200 years. It was founded by a German immigrant named Augustus Schwatke in 1810. Over the years, fellow immigrants Andrew Merker and Gustav Krug joined the business, until Krug took over entirely sometime mid-century. His descendants run the ironworks to this day, employing only 12 people. Our trusty street historians keep us up to date.
1810 and 1841, they enlarged the business.
The scene inside the ironworks is a sharp contrast to the modern traffic-filled street outside. An interior security gate leads into a large room with worn wood floors, made uneven by the weight of tons of anvils and ancient-looking machines. Workmen pound hammers and light up blowtorches. Up a narrow, winding staircase is a room filled with ornamental iron pieces, window grates, fireplace andirons, door hinges, and a beautiful, elaborate wreath of iron roses. Krug & Son forged this wreath in the 1880s. Paul Krug, who runs the shop with his brothers Pete and Steve, describes the skill involved in making such a complex creation.
A rose is sort of a rite of passage for a blacksmith to be able to make. If you can make a realistic-looking good rose, then you've got some experience, and you know what you're doing. So this is a whole wreath of how many roses? One, two, three, four, six roses and leaves and other blooms on it, on a vine that's been textured, and it's great.
What kind of implement would you use to make that, to curl that petal of the rose over a little bit?
Pair of snips, pair of tongs. Remember, you're doing it hot.
And so you would just kind of pull it over, and this petal this way and that petal that way. And
It's something in the head and in the eye, being able to do it and make it look right.
Paul Krug says demand for ornamental ironwork was highest in the Victorian age. The fireplace was the center of home life, so ornate fire screens and fancy implements were all the rage. Balconies and fences were not just utilitarian, but works of art. After the turn of the century, demand fell dramatically. Some of the fasteners holding decorative iron onto buildings began to rust, and pieces would fall, endangering pedestrians, so much of it was removed. Then, in the 1960s, demand exploded. People wanted security gates.
Right after my dad took over the company, there began to be a high demand for security. And, of course, Baltimore was hit with riots in the 60s and so forth and so on, and this company was uniquely in a position to mass-produce that stuff, if you will. He did a booming business in security guards, and that was really the core of the business for at least 15 years. We still offer a lot of that. The volume isn't as high, and I get a lot more people saying, I want window guards, but please, let's make it look nice.
Did you grow up kind of wandering around the shop and seeing what your father was doing and your grandfather was doing? What was it like?
Well, my grandfather passed away before I was old enough to spend much time here, but I definitely spent time with my dad coming to work as a child. And there's a picture my wife has that my mother gave her of me when I was about 9 years old out in the shop painting, with paint all over me and picking up scrap metal off the floor. But I really had my doubts that I wanted to do this, so I went to engineering school and worked for somebody else for a while before I started thinking about, you know, the family business and working here. So I came back as an adult. Steve and Pete are in the shop.
Your brothers.
I think they always knew they wanted to be here, and they've largely been here since they were young adults.
Baltimore is like a lot of East Coast cities in that it used to have just tons and tons of this stuff, of this beautiful wrought iron work and forged iron scroll work all over the place. It's not here anymore. What happened to it?
I think an awful lot of it has been stolen, not only by criminals, but also people renovating buildings have a way of not valuing some of that historical stuff that other people do. And so it kind of goes away quietly that way. There's still plenty of it here, though. And it's nice to be able to take an old project and restore it. You had mentioned that there's a fence that you like along Charles Street, and there is a one of those row houses is the Costa Rican consulate office, and it has been for about 100 years. And I was called by them to take a look at restoring the rail. It had a broken piece, and part of it was rusted. And the man that runs it up there informed me that they have the receipts of when the building was built, and we built the rail, and he wanted us to restore it. And there's something about restoring a railing that was made by your great-grandfather that I did it myself. I just wanted to.
Well, let's go look at the shop. Twenty-year-old Alexandra is Paul Krug's niece. She's standing near a fire-filled forge in a short-sleeved t-shirt. She's just placed a long strip of red-hot steel into a quenching pit to cool and harden it a bit.
Pretty hot. I mean, how close do you... I guess you have to get right on top of it. And you don't wear... You have to wear some kind of protective gear or something.
No, because I stand back here.
Okay. All right. If you say so. Okay. Let's see you make one of these things.
All right.
Alexandra Krug is making what are called sea scrolls. You've seen them. They're curlicues in the shape of the letter C, about 4 inches wide, and show up as flourishes on fences and furniture. The shape of the scroll has to be smooth and uniform, a task that takes some finesse.
See, we take the strip of 11.5-inch long steel, and then we heat one end, and then we taper it. We use this 1918 power hammer. I'll show you.
So, all right, that original long, thin, rectangular strip was of uniform density, thickness throughout.
Yeah.
Now you've tapered the edge, which is very, you made it thinner and rounder, and that's the part that's going to be the curlicue.
Yeah, yeah.
Alexandra curls the super hot metal on an anvil and bends it around a scroll iron. Then, with a little yank and a couple of smacks with a hammer, she transforms the metal into a perfect letter C.
So is this going to be a career for you?
No.
Why not? You said no right away.
I'm into music. I'm a drummer, and I enjoy music very much.
But why did you decide to do this now?
Because I make money, and it takes a lot of money to buy instruments and keep a band going. So.
What if you decide you like this just so much?
I don't think I will. I like it. I do, but... not enough to do it forever.
Alexandra extinguishes the forge. The pile of finished sea scrolls sits on the table, ready to be attached to a fence in an old Baltimore neighborhood called Otterbein. At the front of the shop, an elderly white-haired woman walks in, wearing a knee-length skirt and sensible shoes. She's writing a check for a fireplace implement Krug has made. One gets a strange sense of dislocation seeing her in this shop, just steps away from the littered sidewalks and rap music of Saratoga Street. For now, at least, Krug and Son will continue to pound and forge iron in this unassuming brick building, just as they have done for five generations.